You're listening to the Adam Tracy Underground Podcast, where it's not always advisable, but it is always endorsed.
Today is October 27, 2021. This is the Adam Tracy Experience, where we talk about the economy of necessity, where you go when traditional economies fail you. And today I have the mighty Dave with me. Dave, thank you for being on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure.
Dave and I have something in common, which is very odd. And we've both dealt with something, a narcotic, Schedule I narcotic called COT, which many people don't understand to be a Schedule I narcotic, especially the users of COT, as we'll discuss. And Dave, how did you first come to know of COT? And what was your entree into this industry, if you will?
Well, first of all, it should be stated that before my involvement with this, I had never done anything worse than maybe a parking ticket or speeding or anything like that. And I would have never in a million years volunteered to smuggle or transport or have anything to do with anything related to anything illegal at this level. But I used to work for the airlines many years ago. When you work for the airlines, you get a lot of skinny about deals and things that are going on and some of the underground elements of the business. And I latched onto a company that provides air courier flights, which 99% of the people probably would never even have heard of air courier flights. Basically, you volunteer, or in this case, I volunteer to fly to somewhere in the world, Bangkok, London, Sydney, Hong Kong, major delivery ports in the world, and your flight is free. Okay. The only thing is you can only carry a carry-on bag and you have documents and you're basically the name behind a shipment under the plane. Okay. If a company sends a shipment in cargo, it could sit for weeks and weeks and weeks in customs. Okay. This is a way that they devised to get the stuff in and out of customs in about less than 24 hours. So I basically accompany a shipment. My flight is for free and I can stay 2, 3, 4, 5 days in whatever destination I find myself in. And my return flight is free as well. Sometimes on the return flight, I accompany a cargo. Most times I don't, but it's worth it to them to pay a $600 ticket or $500 ticket or $800 ticket to get their cargo out of customs within 24 hours. Anyway, it was during one of these experiences that one of the guys I was meeting to hand off the documents to, he asked if I would like to transport COT, okay, from London back to LA or back to Toronto or back to Detroit. And I had no idea what that was. And he said, oh, it's just something. And he was really casual. Right. About it. He goes, yeah, it's just something that people chew. It's like a caffeine. It's like caffeine. It's a plant that grows. Totally legal. Totally legal. And we'll fly you. I got a company I work with. We'll fly you to London or Amsterdam. And on your return, stay as long as you want. And on your return, you'll just take some of this COT back with you. I said, great. And this was in the day really before the internet was huge and Google, I think, was just goo. that's how young it was. So I did a little bit of research and this guy was right. It was just a plant that they grew and people chewed it and it gave them a little bit of a caffeine bump. That's it. Nothing ever said it was dangerous or whatever. And I did check in Amsterdam and London and sure enough, it was legal to actually whatever. So I said, yeah. So I was hurting for money back then, I guess. And I said, yeah, sounds great. And I love to travel, obviously. So my first flight, I flew to Amsterdam and I got a buddy of mine to do it also, actually, to come with me. Nice. And it was great for them because now they had two shipments going back. And I went to Amsterdam and hung around for about 4 or 5 days. Then I met this guy at a very seedy cafe and he took me to a very seedy apartment. And he had two suitcases, and in the suitcases were clothing and, you know, accessories that you would normally carry in a suitcase. And there was also all this COT, this plant COT that was wrapped in tightly plastic bags, sealed plastic bags. And they said, that's it. You're good to go. Now, that was in the days, really, it was the late 90s. and then early 2000s, and they really didn't have a whole lot of security for bags that were checked in.
Right.
You know, your carry-on bag, you still went through the regular carry-on screening, but
this was pre-9/11, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And then even after that, I did it for a while after that, and they still didn't really have it down pat. So anyway, and so I would check the bags in, and I come back, I get the bags in Los Angeles or in Toronto, if I was traveling there. And I take the bags and go through my passport control and customs control. And you know, 99% of the time, I would just walk right through and that was it. And there was always a guy waiting for me. And I handed him the thing and he gave me the cash payout.
So just by way of background, right? So as you know, COT is popular in Eastern Africa, like, and it's very well known and grown in like Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, area. Right. And it's very popular, as I found out, in the criminal defense context. It's very popular in amongst like the diaspora as far as like Somalis and stuff like that. So like in Chicago, in Minnesota, in Toronto, you find big Ethiopian or Somalian populations and they want COT. And the funny thing that I always found shocking was like with my clients, they thought it was legal, right? And like they would like swear up and down, well, no, it's legal, even though it was clearly not legal in the United States. And, you know, but it's legal in Ethiopia, for instance, legal in Somalia and those places. So
it's like, and it's like coffee to us.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about you, but I like to have a cup of coffee first thing in the morning and maybe in the afternoon. And if someone took away coffee from me, I mean, it wouldn't be the end of the world, but I'd probably look for ways to get it.
Yeah.
Well, there are these communities, as you know, in the United States, scattered here and there, these major, like, for instance, Somali. And I dealt with the Somalians who were just wonderful, wonderful people, just wonderful people. And they were so nice and they had no way of getting caught. And there were hundreds of them in these communities. And so this is how they did it. This is how they did it. They hired gringos like myself to run the risks. So I didn't know there were big risks in the beginning, and that's how they would get their coffee, so to speak.
Right.
You know,
right? They just want their morning fix.
And I was one of, from what I understood, hundreds and hundreds of people, couriers that would act as couriers for them, and they knew that there was a certain percentage that was not going to get through, but. But as I came to find out, I had two experiences with getting busted. I don't know if you wanted to go there or not, but
I had two
experiences. One, they confiscated the cot. And of course, I played super dumb. Oh, dude, are you kidding? Some guy just gave me that suitcase. You know the warning they always tell you 1,000 times, don't take anything from any stranger.
Right.
I violated that, of course, because I'm an idiot. And, you know, I'm just being facetious, but, you know, I kind of said, oh, my God, you're kidding. I know a friend of mine and he introduced me to this other guy and he gave me the suitcase and asked if I'd bring it to his cousin in L.A. I said, yeah, sure. Why not? And so I did. So they confiscated it and they wrote me a fine for like $1,500 that not only did I never pay, but I've flown a gazillion times all around the world since then and not once. Has this thing ever come back to bite me?
Wow.
So their system was really.
So when you talk about like you were a courier, like let's go back a little bit in the context of you being a courier, like on the legitimate side, you're like a, what they call in the law, a bailee, like you're holding documents and you're facilitating the quick transfer through customs and wherever you're headed to.
Right.
And you're getting paid for this, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You're getting paid for this. And in doing so, right, you link up with the friendly Somalian who says, hey, bring this weed back and, you know, everything will be okay. And we'll pay you extra, right? We'll pay you extra. Now, when so-and-so, you don't have to tell me the amount, but when you meet this guy and the guy says, hey, listen, I'm going to pay you, you know, whatever to bring this back. And you're none the wiser whether it's good, bad, indifferent. How do you assess like the risk return, right? Like, was it a situation where you thought no harm, no foul, like I can't get caught, I'm not doing anything wrong, so I'll take a very minimal amount? Or is it something where you said, hey, this is like a little risky, so I need more? Like, how did you come to your, in your own head? How did you come to the price that says this is fair?
Well, at first, you know, it all seems sketchy. Some Somalian dude comes up. You know, so I did my due diligence. I actually went onto the internet, which was very young in its day, late 90s, maybe 97, 98, something like that. And I did look up cot, and I looked up cot on several different websites, and they all said the same thing. People chew it, it's caffeine. I did see one time that it was a class one, and I do know what class one means. It means serious drugs, heroin, cocaine. But there was some confusion about whether or not it was legal. Now, sometimes, you know better than I do, but I kind of discovered that sometimes the law is a little ambiguous in the sense that, oh, it's legal to possess, but not legal to use, or legal to possess, but not to transport. Oh, you can transport it, but not use it. Oh, you can use it and transport it, but you can't sell it. Oh, you can sell it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many ambiguities, and that's kind of what I got. I got in London, it's free. It's okay in London and Amsterdam. It was legal to possess. So I knew, okay, in London, and this was my thinking, in London or in Amsterdam, I'd be safe. No problems. And I'm kind of a risk taker to some degree. I'm not going to risk 40 years in federal penitentiary, but I figured that was it. So overseas, I was safe. When I got back to the U.S., again, I worked for the airlines for 9 years. So I know how the systems of customs work and all those other things. So I knew that I'd be able to get out of it. I knew what to say, things to say that would kind of alleviate my responsibility. And even if I did have to pay a fine. And they said, hey, you know, if you get fined or whatever, we'll cover it. No problem. Blah, blah, blah.
Nice guys.
So I did tell them about it, but they didn't cover it, and I never paid it, and it just kind of went away. So that's how I kind of assessed the risk. Overseas, I was totally safe because it's legal there. And back in the States, I just kind of figured that I could weasel my way out of it by just doing the old, listen, I'm a white kid from LA. I don't know about cot. What is cot?
Right.
I don't know what the hell it is.
Right. I'm not Somalian. What do you want from me?
Yeah, this guy just gave it to me. He said, well, I bring it to his cousin. Why not? You know, so I figured that was it. And I did use that excuse twice. Once ended up in the fine, and once in Toronto, I ended up in a like a detention facility for about 5 days. Mm. I never thought I was in any serious trouble, but it involved a passport that was lost or stolen that had my name on it or something like it. Just gets uglier and uglier as the story goes on. So that was it. So that's kind of how I assessed it. And my assessments were true. I never really but after the Toronto thing, I got out of it. I figured.
You got out of it. So, and so like the extent of your involvement was you were just the courier and you benefited from the fact that your background in the airline and how this, the machinations of customs and all that works, right? Conceivably, that's just how you did it. And you got in, you got out, and you met your guy in random places across the United States, gave him that, and moved on.
I thought to myself, really? This is
worth it?
Class one? This is nothing. I'm like, drink on a stick. You know, I really, and, you know, being an attorney, you know also that so many of these drug laws are so arcane and so ridiculous on so many levels. This, I guess if it's in a hallucinogenic, I guess they classify it as a class one. I guess.
Yeah.
Kind of some things I read. So cot could give you a little bit, but it was like caffeine or something. I mean, it really was nothing. And I thought, this is a joke. I can't believe this is illegal. You know, I started backing up these guys. I can't believe you guys can't get this.
Right.
You know, I mean, I didn't go so far as to start a foundation for him or anything.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, famously in the movie Black Hawk Down, the Somalis are all hopped up on cop. Like, that was like sort of their thing. They fought with such fervor because they were allegedly hopped up on cot. And, you know, that's why we had the chit show. But so that's interesting. So like at no point in time through that, did you ever really just say, hey, I got to raise my rates, man. You know, like, I mean, you took what you got and your assessment was fair and you just went with that for the limited period that you did this. And then you just said,
hey, for one thing, they flew me round trip to either Amsterdam or London. I did it 6 times. They flew me round trip. They put me up in a simple but a nice hotel.
Yeah.
So, a couple of times, I think it was actually an apartment, like a flat in London. And then when I came back, it did go up. I think I got like $1,000 the first time. And the last time I went, I think it was almost like $1,800.
Okay.
$1,800. Now, I don't think necessarily that what I was bringing back was worth that much, but I think what they were buying, quote unquote, was my continued resource,
right?
You know, continued involvement. Hey, we got a guy who can do this and he can lock it in. So over time, we'll get a lot of this stuff here.
And you mentioned they're sending waves of people. You're just one of them. And
waves of people.
Yeah. Some get caught. And that happens to this day, right? Like I've represented high volume drug traffickers. It's like they send waves of people like ants, and like most of them get squashed, but enough get through and the margins are so high that it makes sense.
Yes, their cost of doing business.
Yeah.
You know, and so, for the mules, we pay the price or, you know, whatever. But I mean, if it was anything other than cot, which is basically chewing on sticks, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Anything other than that, I would never have even entertained the idea of doing it. But this seemed like it was a pretty safe risk.
So what made you finally stop?
Well, I did get busted that one time in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of weird. They didn't bust me for the cot. At first, I was traveling on my passport that I had reported as stolen a year earlier. And it was my passport. And I got a new passport, you know, same number and everything. I got a new passport. But for some reason, as I was going through Toronto passport control, it came up that I was traveling on a stolen passport. Well, I kept telling those dunderheads, I'm the one. It's me. It's my stolen. And I had my license. I had business cards. And I had a million ways to identify myself. Then, once I was sent into a secondary holding place, that's when they went through my bags and then they found the cot. Now, of course, at that point, they figured, okay, these two things are connected.
Right.
We don't know how, but somehow, some way, these two, and they weren't, but they thought they were.
Right. But arguably, you could see
what I'm doing with this. Right. And they said, what are you doing with this cot? And I'm like, what are you talking about? What's cot?
Right.
This is your bag? I said, yeah, it's my bag. My friend's cousin in London gave that to me to bring to his family back here in Toronto. He goes, there's cot in here. And I said, I was pretty good. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I was getting really pissed off. What's cot? I know what you're talking about. And then, of course, we went through the whole thing, and I was there for about 9 hours.
Yeah.
Being investigated, talked to, interviewed, finally. I don't think they bought anything I was saying. So they just sent me to this detention center for like almost five days.
Oh, wow.
And, and it was the Somalians or Ethiopians that were there, because Canada has a major Ethiopian-Somalian immigration issue. And there are hundreds of these guys and women that are always getting busted and sent to these detention centers. And so I'm there, it's like me and like 75 Ethiopian Somalis.
Right. The irony is you're bringing them the cop, right? And like, yeah.
Right. And I thought this is it. But they were really cool. They gave me telephone cards to make phone calls. And they gave me, because they took everything, my wallet, all my money, my passport, they took everything, I had nothing. They gave me a baggie one night, and the baggie had a razor and a brand new toothbrush and toothpaste. I mean, they were really great people.
Yeah.
And they really supported me. And I told them what I was doing. And then after about 5 days, I guess they figured, why are we holding this guy? It's,
yeah, right.
No salts. So they kept the cot, of course, and that was it. And, you know, could you give me names of, you know, they asked me if I can give them the names in London. And I was like, oh, my God, I wouldn't even remember the name if you had a gun to my head. Yeah, Somalians.
Right. You know? This is some guy. Yeah, yeah. He probably didn't give you the real name anyway. He's George.
Right.
Sure. I'm George from Mogadishu. Whatever.
Well, one time I do remember, before doing this podcast, I was trying to think back on some of the things about this trip. And one guy I was introduced in, I think, Amsterdam. He said his name was Henry.
Yeah, right.
I said, wait a minute. I could live in Somalia for 100 years and I'd never run into a Henry.
Right. So,
that's not, that can't be your name, you know. And then he gave me his real name, and I said, I'll call you Henry.
Yeah, we'll go Henry. Henry's easier. So that was it then. That was it.
After that, I got kind of scared. I did a little more research. It was 3 years down the road. Internet was a little better. I did read it was class one. I did read that it was legal in some places to use, but you can't bring it into the U.S. And once I read and understood that you can't bring it into the U.S., then I figured, what am I killing myself for?
Yeah.
Right. Free trip to London? You know, how many times can you go to London?
Yeah.
You know? So, and I got a little scared. I mean, you know, that something could go the wrong way and they could put something else in this bag, or who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? And
right.
I've been lucky this far, and this far and no more.
Yeah,
this far and no further.
There's generally a lack of quality control in the narcotics trade. So
yeah.
You never know what they stick in there as well. But that's
you never know.
That's a crazy story, man. I got to give you credit. That is some crazy stuff. And to this day, these people swear up and down that it's legal, and it's like it's just so not legal.
But yeah, I know, and especially there. Because I asked them many times, I said, I can bring this to the U.S. no problem. And they said, yeah, we do it all the time.
Yeah, sure you do.
But that doesn't make it legal.
Right, you know. Right. They bring heroin here all the time.
Right.
Right. Exactly. I mean, okay.
So, you know. But first few times, I made it. No problemo. And I figured, okay, so far so good.
Yeah.
No, so far so good.
That's a crazy story, man. Listen, man, I'm gonna wrap it up and let you go. This is a lot to process.
Right.
I appreciate it, and you know, you keep doing what you're doing, but that's a fantastic story, and we really appreciate you coming on, man.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Adam Tracy Underground Podcast. For more episodes, visit us at adamtracy.io or your leading podcast providers.